questions, questions that sadly come up. One relates to making aliyah versus kibud avaim, both if the parents don't wish the child to do it or even if they're neutral, but the child won't be able to do kibud avaim to the same degree if they're living in a different continent. And the second relates to the halachos of kibud avaim when a parent is nitra fadaita, or they experience dementia or some other thing, they're not all there. And the same Gemara addresses both of these issues. So I'll read the Gemara just a couple of lines and then we'll discuss the implications of it. Rav Asi have le hahi ima zakena. Rav Asi had an old mother. Amrle, ba'ina tachshitin. So she said to him, I need some jewelry. Avadla, so he made her. Good son, got her jewelry. Ba'ina gavra, so then she says, I need a man. I want to get married. So he says, Nayin lech. So I'm going to look into it. I'm going to try to find you a husband. Pa'idna gavra de shapir kavasech. I need a young man who's good looking like you. So the Mefarshim explained that at this point he realized that she'd lost it. In other words, you're not going to find a young, good looking man to marry an 80-year-old lady who's not all there. And therefore it says, Shavka, he left her, the Azal Aradi Israel. And he went to Eretz Yisrael. He went on Aliyah. So we're going to talk about this more, but let's read on in the Gemara. Shama de Ka'azla Abasre. So he finally gets to Eretz Yisrael. He's always wanted to go to learn and study Torah in Israel. Finally he has a chance. But then he hears that his mother has followed him. So he wants to know whether he should go back, even if it's to go back and greet her temporarily, but to help her. And here the question relates to leaving Eretz Yisrael. The halachos of leaving Eretz Yisrael are not so straightforward. One needs a legitimate reason to leave. So he went to ask a shayla, Asala kamed Rabbi Yochanan. Amarlai, Mahu latseis me Eretz Yisrael l'chutz laretz. He asked Rabbi Yochanan, is it mutter to leave Eretz Yisrael l'chutz laretz? Amarlai aser, he says, no. Likras ima, what about if I'm going to greet my mother? Amarle, eini yode, I don't know. So, itrach porta hadaras. He waited a little bit, and then he came back and asked the same shayla again. Amarle asi. So Rabbi Yochanan said to him, asi nisratzes latzes, you want to leave? Hamakom yachzir chalashalom. May Hashem return you in peace. So he was a little nervous with this response. Maybe he's upset at me because I was nudging him, asking him the same question again next day. What did he say to you? He told me, come back in peace. Hashem should return you in peace. He wouldn't give you a bracha if he was upset at you. No, he wasn't upset. So he got a rishus to leave and he went to follow his mother. But he finally is getting towards there and he finds out that it's not her at this point that's coming towards Eretz Yisrael, but her Aron. She had passed away. Amar, he said, I yad I lo nafki. Had I known, I wouldn't have left. Meaning to say, the Riyah Zaken explains, that even though obviously being melave, the mace, is a mitzvah, but it's not a mitzvah, as we also mentioned, there is kibud avaim lachar misa, but that's not a mitzvah that warrants leaving Eretz Yisrael. To go see my mother when she's alive, that one may leave Eretz Yisrael to do, but not after she was niftaris. So that's the Gemara. So we need to figure out the implications, both with respect to the question of living in Eretz Yisrael versus kibud avaim, and also with respect to kibud avaim when parents are not entirely there. So the Re'iri writes, with respect to the first question, afal pi shehamitzvos lo nitnu lidachos mipnei kibud avaim kimo sheyisbar, even though you're not allowed to violate the Torah for kibud avaim. For example, we'll talk about this a little later, but if a parent tells a child to do something that's halachically problematic, the child should not listen to the parents. Mikol makom mutter latzeis me'Eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz. However, one may leave Eretz Yisrael to chutz la'aretz l'kras aviv l'kras imo v'chein l'shar minei kavod. So this is okay. Why? So we will see that the halacha is that though, generally speaking, one may not leave Eretz Yisrael, but if it's for a good reason, for example, Parnassa or Talmud Torah, someone who can't find a good yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael that's ideal for them and they think that they will learn more Torah in Chutz La'aretz, one's allowed to. So the Miri is saying that we see from this Gemara that one may leave Eretz Yisrael in order to do Kibud Aveim. The Rambam writes as follows: Aser latzeis me'Eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz, ella lilmod Torah, o lisa isha, o lahatzil min ha'akum v'yachzor l'shalom. There are three things that permit one to leave Eretz Yisrael to chutz la'aretz. Number one, Talmud Torah, like we mentioned. Again, assuming that the Talmud Torah would be of greater quality in Chutz La'aretz. Number two, to get married. And number three, to retrieve money that was taken from you that you would not otherwise be able to get. V'chein, yotzehu l'schora, likewise, you could go for business. Aval l'shkon b'chutz la'aretz aser, but to actually live there, in other words, you're allowed to leave for business, that's one thing, but to actually leave Eretz Yisrael to live in Chutz La'aretz, that's aser. Elim ken chazak sham ha'ra'av, unless the famine is so intense, ad shenase shav dinar chitin b'shnei dinar, that the price of food has doubled in price. This relates to the upcoming holiday of Shavuos and the permissibility of the leaving of Eretz Yisrael at times of famine. V'amed v'amamurim shayu amos mitzuyos v'ah Paris Bioker, fine. Okay, so that's the halacha and the Rambam. Not all Rishonim agree. There's a discussion in Tosfos Avodah Zarah. Some Rishonim say you're allowed to leave for all mitzvos. Others are more restrictive. It's interesting, though, that the Rambam does not mention Kibud Aveim. You get the impression that the Rambam did not hold you're allowed to leave for Kibud Aveim, because what were the three things he basically said? Parnasa and Talmud Torah and Lisa Isha, and even then, generally speaking, only temporarily. So, these are based off of Gemaras. It's Gemara of Avodah Zarah primarily. So, the poskim have different approaches. Some poskim point out that not only do we paskin that it's mutter to leave Eretz Yisrael for parnasa in the sense of if a person is poor, but even laharviach, which means to say that even if one's basic minimal needs are being met in Eretz Yisrael, still one is allowed to leave, at least temporarily, to make more money. In which case, it doesn't make any sense that you wouldn't be able to allow to leave for kibud afaim. And why was it even a question in terms of the Gemara Kiddushin? So the Maharit answers it must be that he was a Kohen, Ravasi was a Kohen. There are somewhat more onerous restrictions for a Kohen leaving in Eretz Yisrael because of the concept of Tumas Amimin, and that was the discussion. So it's not quite clear what the halacha is, but there is a Tshuva Satashbetz, which is quoted by many poskim, that writes that you're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz except for Lomo Torah, Lisa Isha, and Kibud Aveim. And they paskin, therefore one is allowed to leave based off of this Gemara, the simple reading of this Gemara, one is allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Kibud Aveim. Now that's with respect to leaving Eretz Yisrael. But what about living in Chutz La'aretz for the purpose of Kibud Aveim? So perhaps as well you could see from our sugya that you're allowed to continue at least living in Chutz La'aretz for Kibud Aveim, because Rav Asi did not leave his mother until he felt he was no longer able to do Kibud Aveim. He only finally left his mother when Nitra Fadaita. So the implication is until that point, even though he might have wanted to leave and move to Eretz Yisrael, he did not. And therefore, many poskim say that you see from here that you're certainly allowed to live in Chutz La'aretz in order to be Mekayim Kibud Afa'im. And the Chachma Sadim writes, it's a Kavachomer. If you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for Kibud Afa'im, so certainly one's allowed to remain in Chutz La'aretz for Kibud Afa'im. And he quotes an interesting medrash to support this view, that we don't always cite Midrashim Lahalacha, but he cites this medrash. And he writes that the medrash says that Avram Avinu was told to go leave Chutz La'aretz and go to Eretz Yisrael. And Avram was told, for you, this is the halacha. You, Avram, should leave your parents. When Avram left, his parents were still alive, at least his father was, even though when you read the Parshios, it doesn't seem that way, because you read Parshas Noach, and it mentions the death of Avram's father, and then you read Lech Lecha, you read about his going to Eretz Yisrael. But Rashi points out that it mentions Avraham, the death of Avram's father, early, so that people wouldn't think that he's leaving his father or leaving his parents to go to Eretz Yisrael. But in fact, that's exactly what happened. But the Medrash says this was an exception. The Medrash says that though that was the right thing to do for Avram Avinu, but going forward, that's not the right thing to do. So, obviously, this short discussion is not comprehensive, and should it be Lemaisa, one should ask a Shaila. But what we see from here is that, at least according to many poskim, Kibud Avaim is a strong justification to stay in Chutz La'aretz and even to leave Eretz Yisrael to fulfill, at least leaving Eretz Yisrael temporarily. Now, what about the opposite case? You really want to go to Chutz La'aretz, to Eretz Yisrael, but are you allowed to? And that's a complex question. Yes?
Isn't it commendable that he left in the first place?
So let's talk about that next point, about is it right to leave when his mother was senile? So let's talk about the next question of Kibud Avaim when a parent is senile. So the Rambam writes the following. Mi shenitra fadaito shel aviv o shel imo. If a person's parents, mother or father, become senile, mishtada linhogimam kafi datam, you try to take care of them according to their understanding, ad shiruham alehem. But if you can't, because they've lost their mind exceedingly, so then so you can't just abandon them, you have to find someone else to take care of them. Nowadays we might say that's a nursing home or the like, but you have to find someone to take care of them. But at that point, it's okay to no longer take care of them. Now, the source for this Rambam is presumably our Gemara, meaning to say that the Rambam understood that our Gemara, when Rav Asi left Eretz Yisrael, when his mother became senile, he didn't abandon her. She wasn't all alone. Of course, he found someone to care for her. And a child's responsibility doesn't simply end when his parents become senile. However, what the Rambam maintains is that there could be a point when simply the child's unable to continue to care for them. Now, it's interesting because there are some of the Mefarshim don't understand the Rambam because they say, Manashach, if somebody else could take care of them, then a child could take care of them. Why would that be? And the Mefarshim talk about it, but the Pashup Shat, the answer is that sometimes professionals are needed, and sometimes parents, children, will not be best suited to care for their parents. I saw the Aruch HaShulchan says something along these lines, the Ein Zu HaSaga, the Ravid's question is not a question, Dinira Leila, Daramba, Machikam, Diadua, She Hamishtagim Biyoser Bechreach, La'asran Bezikim, Uvachaval. Sometimes you have no choice but to tie up someone in ropes. In other words, if you don't, yeah, Baruch Hashem, I think nowadays, probably most of the time you don't have to do that. We have nursing homes and the like, but you could imagine in other circumstances, there's no choice but to literally tie someone down. The child himself can't do that, and therefore under such circumstances, he should find others to do this, though he can't do it himself. And that's presumably what the Rambam means. So the answer is, was it right for what Rav Asi did? So the way the Rambam understands it is that Rav Asi at least understood that he could no longer handle his mother, so he was, going to have to put her in a home. And at that point, then there's no reason for him to stay in Chutz Lars anymore. He wanted to make Aliyah, wanted to learn in Eretz Yisrael. He hadn't done so, presumably because he was caring for his mother. And now, he finally went. It didn't quite work out as he planned. I saw a Shaila in the Tzitz Eliezer of a question. Somebody's mother, again, became very demented, and the doctor said that she has to be tied to a chair. So otherwise she would go, it says, the Kadesha lo tishtolel. I don't know what that means exactly. She would go wild. She would. So the question is, can the son do this? And the Tzitz Eliezer says, it's usher. You have to have somebody else do it. It's not right for a child to do that. Now, obviously, Nishmas Avram says that we're not talking about a case where there's a danger. If there's danger, then even the child should be the one to tie the parent down. But the point is that there are certain types of things that you might have to do to someone, and the child shouldn't be the one to do this. There's an interesting discussion that we'll get to it later. For example, if a parent needs a shot, is a child allowed to do it? And the reason why it's not so pashut is because giving a parent a wound, hakah is an iser, chiyav misa, that's worse for a parent. So there too we say that if somebody else could do it, if there's another physician, for example, that could treat the parent, it's better that the other person do it. If the child is going to be the best physician, then maybe that's different. Anyhow, so those are some of the halachos that come up in terms of those two issues. We mentioned before that if a parent asks a child to violate the halacha, the child should listen. The Gemara derives this from the pasuk we read 2 weeks ago, Ishimo Vavivti Rau, Veshav Sosai Tishmoru, which means that, of course, you should listen to your parents, but if they tell you to violate Shabbos, you shouldn't listen. And it's not just Shabbos, but really any halacha that a parent tells a child to violate, so they should not listen to the parents. And not only for mitzvos d'oraisa, but even if it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan, one should not listen to the parents, because, as the Gemara points out, they too are obligated to listen to Hashem. They too are obligated to follow the halacha, and therefore you don't listen to them if they tell you to violate the halacha. They don't have that authority. Now, that's when it comes to the violation of a halacha, something that's usur that they tell you to do. However, the question is, what about if it's a chumrah? What about if the halacha doesn't say this is usur? So the Sefer Chasidim writes an interesting thing. He writes that ben shiodeish aviv imo mitzta'arim al shehu mis'aneh. Let's say you have a child and he fasts every Monday and Thursday, mamish, a big tzaddik, and this causes his parents a lot of pain. They, him or her, no difference, right? They don't. They when they see their child never eating and fasting, so it causes them pain. So the Sefer Chasidim says, lo yisane b'tayne sheinu chova. Then you shouldn't fast except if it's an obligation. It's an obligation, so like we said, then you shouldn't listen to your parents. If they tell you, if it's Shiva Sabatamas, then you should fast. But if it's just a optional fast, even though it's a chumrah, it's a midas chasidus, at least that's what you think, so still you should not listen to them. So you see from here that when it comes to chumras, perhaps if it causes the parents pain to see you observe these chumras, then it's not something you should do. And this is something that comes up frequently. There's very frequently certain things, practices, whatever it is, that the parents don't really want the child to do, or if they observe it, sometimes it comes up with Chal of Yisrael. So assuming that you think that observing Chal of Yisrael is a chumrah, because in America, because you think that you follow the view of Rav Moshe or the like. So even if the child would want to otherwise be makbid about that, if it's going to cause the parents to become upset or the like, then that's something that you should think twice about. There are other kpedos about... this one wasn't so simple, but somebody once told me that it really bothers his father that he davens a very long Shemone Esrei and that he shuckles a lot. So, okay. You know, maybe it shouldn't bother his father that much. What a wonderful thing, but to daven with kavana. But these types of questions are tricky. And what you see from this Sefer Chassidim is that one... Again, in that case, it's not an open and shut case, but one certainly does consider the feelings of the parents. At the same time, if it's a minhag that's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, generally speaking, you would not listen to your parents. And that's because there are two armits of Kvod Shemayim. For example, the Birkei Yosef writes, Im Amr lo aviv shelo yilbash chorim aptiras imo ke'avel aim. Apparently in those days there was a custom for mourners to wear black. I'm not sure why, but somebody's mother passed away and his father said, I don't want you to wear black clothing. So should he listen? So the Marshal says, you should listen. Why? L'chorer, because that's a minhag, but it's not a din in the Shulchan Aruch and the like and that type of thing. If it's going to really bother the father and he's told you not to do it, then you should listen. But again, other cases, it really has to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis, and the posek has to know, you know, how much is this thing halachically obligated and to what extent is it a chumrah. Also, it might make a difference to what extent the parents are being reasonable or unreasonable and the like. The Shulchan Aruch, though, does write that if a father tells his son, don't speak to someone, right? Let's say the father gets into a big machlokas. He's bregus with Chaim Yankel. And he says to son, I don't want you to talk to Chaim Yankel. And the child, the son, the daughter, wants to make up. He wants to make shalom. He wants to get back together. So he shouldn't listen to his father or his mother. Why? Because according to the Torah, it's aser to hate a Jew. And you're v'haftal v'echa kamocha. So... okay, maybe try to do it, make up, make shalom. You know, I don't know if it's a good idea to do it in the presence of your parent. But that's considered a request to go against the Torah, to continue that family feud, right? That's a horrible thing. And so even though the parent really wants a child to continue the family feud, the child should recognize God Allah shalom and make up. Okay, so here's an interesting shayla. That somebody I saw asked. A parent tells the child to buy him a pack of cigarettes. Well, what do you do? So, first of all, he's harming his parents by giving him the cigarettes. It's probably, you can make a very strong case that it's usher to smoke cigarettes, so you're, you know, if your parent asks you to get you buy you a machalos asuras, would you do it? Presumably not. So, well, the cigarettes are different. So, the Beis Lechem Yehuda, which is quoted on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, quotes the following from the Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim was a Rishon. Im haya av shahaya chola, v'amru lo arofim, shelo yishte mayim, shelo yochal davar ploni. A parent was sick, and a doctor said, don't drink water. V'shal ha'av leben shi'itin lo mayim. So the parent tells the child, please bring me a glass of water. But the doctor said no. And not only that, v'amar lo, im lo titin li, lo emchol lecha lo b'olam hazeh, v'lo b'olam haba. If you don't give me that glass of water, I'm never going to forgive you. Not b'olam hazeh, not in olam haba. So what should you do? So the Sefer Chassidim says, einu mechuyev l'shmau alone. You don't have to listen. So maybe, based off of this, you shouldn't get your parents the pack of cigarettes. On the other hand, the Birka Yosef writes that if the parent asks for something that is harmful for the parents, that hurts their health, but it's not a sakana, then you should listen. And is that against the Sefer Chassidim? So he says, no. Maybe the Sefer Chassidim is talking about a case where there's mamish dangerous. So then, of course, you shouldn't listen. The doctor said it's dangerous if you drink water. So then, if the parent says, give me a glass of water, you can't listen, because that's mamish dangerous. If it's something that's harmful for their health, you know, the doctors tell your parent they should avoid high cholesterol food and don't eat red meat. And the parents ask the kid, please, you know, bring me a steak. So that, the Birka Yosef says, no, you should listen. You should listen to the parents. Not clear. I saw that the Nishmas Avram quotes the Yad Shaul, who says, even if there is no danger, you shouldn't listen to your parents. And that Sefer argues it's a machlokas harishonim about this particular question. But I saw that some poskim say that you should listen in the case of cigarettes and in the case of, like we said, red meat and the like. Because, in other words, we're dealing with things that are not going to imminently affect their health. It's not going to put them into immediate danger. Obviously, each additional cigarette does increase the chance of death from cigarettes, and each additional piece of meat for someone with a high cholesterol can make them more unhealthy, and you could definitely try to talk them out of it or see if you could convince them to eat the soy patty instead of the steak. But in that case, we saw that Rav Melamed in Sefer Pnimi Halacha says, if you can't talk them out of it, then where it's not going to have this immediate effect on their health, then you can listen. And among other things, he said, look, you know, if you don't listen, it's going to make a lot of fight. It's going to cause a lot of distress. So his blood pressure is going to go up. Anyway, when he starts screaming at you and yelling at you that you're being a terrible son and not listening to him, along similar lines, you have to look sometimes at the bigger picture and not the smaller picture. And sometimes, even though the doctor said, you know, don't eat more red meat or don't smoke, in terms of the bigger picture, even relating to their health, refusing to get it for them isn't really going to help them. It's very unlikely that they're going to quit smoking just because you refuse to buy them the pack of cigarettes. So what's going to happen? They'll go themselves, they'll get somebody else to do it, it's going to increase resentment, and since that's the case, you should look at the bigger picture, and in cases like that, maybe it does make sense. Does make sense to listen to one's parents. But again, it's not clear cut. Yes?
In the case of like dementia or like delirium, I guess if they ask you for something they normally wouldn't want you to do, but in the state that they're in, they're asking for, let's say, cigarettes or something.
So again, I think you have to think about the consequences of what will happen if you say no and what will happen if you say yes, and make a decision based off of that.
Can you refuse to help them remain in their presence if they themselves are smoking and secondhand smoking and helping yourself?
Aha. So that's another question, which in general which relates relationship to mitzvahs, which is, should you do a mitzvah if that is going to put you into danger? So obviously, general danger, obviously you should not put yourself into danger to perform a mitzvah and the like. I don't know the medical statistics and the like. I would imagine that breathing some secondhand smoke in, you know, for a short period of time in order to help your parents is not going to have a significant enough of an effect on your health to make you exempt from a mitzvah. You know, I think standing at a bus stop is also, you got a fair amount of secondhand smoke as well. But again, there's no doubt that in these types of cases, you have to do a cost-benefit analysis. And if, let's say, the question is living with your parents, in order to do kibud aveim, but where they smoke, and we're talking about a lot of secondhand smoke, that could be a very different type of question. Okay. Yes. No.
Oh, I was just wondering, is there a relationship, I guess, always of kibud aveim and lif me'iver, where, I guess, a similar rule, if they could otherwise get it themselves, then that doesn't.
That makes a difference. Yeah. The truth is that even with respect to lif me'iver, though you're correct that there's no d'oraisa violation of lif me'iver if they could do it anyway without you, but there is an issur d'rabbanan called misayei l'dvar aveira, where you are facilitating the violation of the Torah, that such that even if they could do it without you, you shouldn't. It's an issur d'rabbanan to facilitate it. Now that issur d'rabbanan is somewhat more lenient than the din d'oraisa, and therefore there are cases where that might be permitted when other factors are at play. But even then, we don't say that you should, generally speaking, you should never be misayel advar aveira, which means to say that you should never facilitate the doing of an aveira, even if it is the case that they will do the aveira and can do the aveira without you anyway. But it's a good point. In other words, for example, I don't think, let's say a person's parents don't keep kosher. So they ask you to go shopping for them. So I think the answer is, of course, you should do it. If they ask you to buy something non-kosher, you probably shouldn't listen. But if they ask you to buy groceries and you buy them meat and you buy them milk, and you know that there's a pretty good chance that they might mix it together or the like, or so I'm not sure that in that case, it's an interesting question, but in that case, perhaps you still should go shopping for them. You're facilitating an aveira. Yeah, they could get it without you. They could do easy fresh or whatever. But forget easy kosher. They could get. They could still buy meat and milk, right? It's a tough question. It's not so pashut. Reminds me of a very famous psak of Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach. It's quoted in Mincha Shlomo, Chelak Aleph Simin Lamed Hey. There's a halacha that you shouldn't give food to a person if they're not going to make a bracha. Why? Because that is going to cause an isser of achila below bracha. But if doing that, and I don't remember the exact tshuva, it's worth checking, but if doing that is going to lead to a lack of harmony, and you know, somebody has a chiloni plumber and asks for a glass of water, and we're going to say no. That's so. Shlomo Zalman says that let's look at the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is that you're much more likely to bring him closer to Torah and mitzvos, and to cause him to make a bracha if you do give him, than if you don't. Somebody once told me that. I'm sorry.
In glass of water, you don't necessarily need a bracha.
Of course you do.
No, you're not.
Well, nobody, I mean, there's almost never a time when you drink a glass of water without needing to drink a bracha. It's true. So if he asks you to for a bracha so you can swallow his pill, then it's not an issue. So somebody once told me that he relied on this tshuva from Shlomo Zalman, and he gave some chiloni worker at his house something to drink. And he pulls out a yarmulke from his back pocket and makes a bracha. So he tells him, he said, "I'm only making a bracha because you didn't tell me I have to make a bracha. if you'd have told me, then
very
I."
Nice.
So. Okay. So another question, a sad question that comes up not too uncommonly, is what happens if someone wants to get married and the parents don't like the idea? Parents don't like the guy, they don't like the girl. What do we do? So there's a tshuva from the Maharik that addresses this question. Now, obviously, we try very hard to make it work. But if push comes to shove, and one really knows and is confident this is the person that they should marry, and the parents still adamantly refuse, then you don't have to listen to the parents, and one can get married against their wishes. And he says that there are three reasons for this. Number one, chada, dafilu inyan mamon, odi le rabbanon rabir miyakmandam mishalav. So we paskin, as we noted last time, that a child does not have to expend their own money to fulfill the mitzvah of kibud av va'em. Now, if you don't have to spend your own money, if you don't have to give up your own money, so kava chomer, you don't have to give up your spouse, the person who you love and that you would want to marry. That's a much greater hefseid than simply the money and marrying someone who you don't want to marry. It's also a greater hafsed. The Maharik's also talking about the opposite case, where the parents insist that you marry somebody that you don't want to marry, and that too is a huge hafsed. And therefore, if you don't have to give up your own money, certainly you don't have to give up your lifetime happiness, and that's reason one. You don't have to listen. Number two, vo dekarva davar be'enai lios kemitzvah lavar adivrei Torah. We already said before that you shouldn't listen to your parents when they tell you to violate the Torah. Now, if you marry a person you don't love, you're going to violate the Torah's mitzvah of Hatulecha Kamocha. And therefore, this is like the halacha that you don't listen to your parents when they tell you to violate the Torah. It's like an aveira. And likewise, even with respect to the mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to get married, and it's a mitzvah to marry the person who you think will make the best spouse. And if they tell you not to do that, it's like they're telling you not to do a mitzvah. And therefore, again, that's reason number two, that you wouldn't listen to them. And reason number three is what we talked about several weeks ago, which is that, strictly speaking, the mitzvah of kibud av v'eim at least is formulated narrowly by the Torah as things that benefit the parents. Machilo, mashkehu, malbisho, manilo, taking care of their physical needs. This is something that has nothing to do with the parents' needs. It has nothing to do with the parents' needs, and therefore, at least with respect to this type of halacha, we will follow the Torah's narrow formulation of the mitzvah, and therefore one wouldn't listen. And this is the halacha. We follow the view of the Maharik. Yes? Yes. So the story of Rav Chanan Rabbi Akiva would be an example of this, indeed. Along very similar lines, Shulchan Aruch also quotes a Trumas HaDeshen that says, let's say a child wants to study in a particular yeshiva, and the parents say no. The example he's talking about is, sounds like the yeshiva was in a bad neighborhood, and the parents are nervous. I don't know. The kid wants to go to study in Hebron, in Yeshivat Hebron, not the one in Yerushalayim, in Hebron. So the parents are very nervous, needless to say, and understandably. But the child thinks that, now he's not going for idealistic reasons, that would be less obvious, because of what we saw earlier today, but he actually wants to go because his Rebbe's there, and he knows that the best Torah study for him will be there. It's better than anywhere else. So, do you have to listen to your parents? So the Shulchan Aruch says, you don't. The Shulchan Aruch writes, even though Av'im are mochebo, shedoeg, shebaosair, haovdei kochavim, alilim, there are blood libels in that city, V'kach im ha'av moch. Okay. So that's the halacha. That's the halacha. This is the gras as an application of the rule. The gadol Talmud Torah yoser mikibud av va'im. Now, obviously, before doing this, the child should think very carefully and be misyayitz with the chachamim and the like, both in terms of the case of marrying the person and the case of the yeshiva. A lot of times the parents are right. A lot of times that the kids think they know everything and they don't. Not always. And it's a tricky question. But these questions obviously have to be weighed very carefully. Yes?
Does this apply to a situation where someone wants to go to the army in Israel?
Aha. So it's, again, a tricky question. Going to the army is presumably a mitzvah, and so the parents are telling the child not to do a mitzvah, and they're doing so because they think it's dangerous.
Even for an American?
So it's a very tricky question because, you know, most mitzvahs, you're right, you don't do if it's dangerous, right? The Menuchas Chinuch points out that wouldn't apply to something like going to the army. Because, and even Yishev Eretz Yisrael and the like, because if somebody didn't do that mitzvah because it was dangerous, then nobody would do the mitzvah, and there'd be no army. So it's a tricky question, but one could make the case that would be an example of, it would fall into the categories that we said of the Ma'arik and the Torah Sadesh and the like, where a child wants to do a mitzvah and the parents aren't letting them. And this really relates, you know, I think the three reasons that the Maharik gives could be used to apply over here. But it's not so simple. And in a sense, the Machayev might be less and the stakes are greater, but you could definitely make the case that that would be a situation where a child does not have to listen to a parent. Yes? Okay, so let's. That's a very good question. So let's take that question. So, slightly different version of this question. What about if you have a mitzvah to do versus kibud avayim, a different mitzvah? We're not talking about aver, but a different mitzvah. So the Gemara actually discusses this. The Gemara says, Abba Omer Ashkeni Mayim, U'mitzvah Lasos. Parent says, can I have a cup of water? And at the same time, you have a mitzvah. So what do you do? Meniach ani kvod Abba, v'osas ha-mitzvah. I'm going to do the mitzvah. Why? She'ani v'abba chayavim b'mitzvah. Both me and my father are obligated in the mitzvah. And therefore, the mitzvah takes precedence. However, the Gemara continues, someone else could do the mitzvah, so then, and you do the kibud avayim. So the Gemara answers, it depends. If this mitzvah will not be done without my doing it immediately, so then I should do the mitzvah. But if somebody else could do the mitzvah, you know, usually we always say, mitzvah habal yadcha, so you should do it yourself. It's about Yosemi Bishlucha. We don't, if I have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, normally I shouldn't say, give it to somebody else. I should chaperayim. But here, where it's coming at the expense of kibud avayim, which is another mitzvah, so then I should allow someone else to do the mitzvah and do the kibud avayim. Now the truth is, it's very interesting, the whole idea, because, I really have in front of me two mitzvahs, right? One mitzvah is kibud avayim, and one mitzvah is whatever the other mitzvah is. So maybe, why is it so obvious that the other mitzvah goes first? It actually is interesting. If you look, there seems to be a machlokas between the Tosos and Rambam about this point. But without getting into the details, I guess we'll leave the details now, it's late. But that's the halacha. So the halacha is that you should do the mitzvah unless somebody else could do the mitzvah. Now the Chai Adam writes the following, and this is based off of the Rishonim. Abba Amar Lo Hashkeni Mayim V'yesh Lo Lefanav Mitzvah Beres. A parent says, give me a cup of water, and again you have a mitzvah in front of you. So the first point that the Chai Adam adds, which is probably obvious from the Gemara, is we're talking about a mitzvah overis. In other words, a mitzvah that is time sensitive. If I don't do it now, then I won't be able to do it later. In other words, I want a daven shacharis, and my mother says, can I have a cup of coffee? So I should give her the cup of coffee and daven later. It would only be a mitzvah overis if by making her a cup of coffee, I will miss this man. Okay? Then it's a mitzvah veris. But assuming that I could daven now or I could daven 5 minutes later, so then, of course, I should make her the cup of coffee. And then he says, if it could be done by somebody else, like Kfuras Hameis or the like, so then again, let the other person do it. But then he says, "Aval in kvar hischil beosa mitzvah." If you began the mitzvah, even though it's efshar al yedei acherim, let's say a person's on the chaver kedisha, and they're in the middle of doing the mitzvah, and their mother calls them up and says, "Can you, pick up some groceries or whatever it is?" So even though there you could have somebody else finish the mitzvah for you, you should finish the mitzvah, because we say ha'osek b'mitzvah pater min ha'mitzvah. But if you didn't begin the mitzvah yet, so that's when we say if somebody else could do the mitzvah, then you should leave it for them to do, and you should do kibud ava'im. But of course, if the mitzvah is not passing, it's not a mitzvah baris, then do kibud ava'im. Okay. I guess we'll stop here in terms of kibud ava'im, and we'll just do a little bit more of Hilchos Tshuva, as we've been doing for the last 5 minutes. So we're in the last parak of Hilchos Tshuva, and we're talking about the mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem. And the Rambam writes, so the last thing he said is that the mitzvah of Hashem is to do what's right because it's right. Ose es ha'emes, mipnei shu emes. Though we believe in schar and olam haba, and we absolutely believe that we will be rewarded for all that we do, that's right. But that shouldn't be, ideally, our motivation. And the Rambam writes, u'ma'ala zu ki ma'ala gedola ad me'od. This level of being Oved Hashem Ehava is an extraordinarily high madrega. Vein kol chacham zoche ba. Not even every chacham is zoche to this level. The malas Avram Avinu. This was the madrega of Avram Avinu. Shekra'o HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ohavo. Hashem called him his lover. Lefi shlo avad ella mi'ava. Because he only served God out of Ava. Now, I have a question, if you remember. It's hard to remember because we did this halacha 2 weeks ago. But the Rambam, in the previous halacha, told us that the person who just serves God for reward or to avoid punishment, that's serving God Meira, and that's a very low level. A very low level. It's the way Amai Haaretz Tanim serve God, and maybe it's okay for Tanim, he says, Ad Shatir Bada'atan V'Avdu Me'ava, till they mature and are Ovid Me'ava. So on one hand, in the previous halacha, he said that to serve God out of Yira for reward, to avoid punishment, is a very, very low level. And now he says, to serve God out of Ahava is an extraordinarily high level, the Madrig of Avram Avinu. Not even all Chachamim reach that level. So which one is it? So the answer is, presumably, that there are many, many Madrigos in between. And what the Rambam is saying is to serve God entirely out of Ahava, that is an extraordinarily high level. That's the Madrig of Avram Avinu. But that's not something that even Chachamim necessarily reach. On the other hand, to serve God entirely out of Yira is a very low level. And most people, most Ovdei Hashem, fall in between. And the goal is to grow in this level. Most people have many motivations for what we do. On the one hand, we think of ourselves. And serving God out of Yira is really, as we mentioned last week, egocentrical, because it's about me. It's about me. Will I get punished? Will I be rewarded? That's not Ahava. Ahava is when it's not about me. But at the same time, even though serving Hashem with entirely about making entirely about me is a very low level, hopefully we have some Ahava, some Lashma. But at the same time, most people don't reach a Madrega when it's not at all about them. And the Avoda is to grow in this respect. And that's what the Rambam writes, that this is what the Torah commands. V'hi amalash tzivanu b'ha-kadosh baruch hu adei Moshe Rabbeinu sh'ne'amar v'ahavta s'ashem alokecha v'chol v'avcha v'chol nafshcha v'chol me'odecha. And he says a very interesting thing. When a person does have that requisite or appropriate level of Ahava, Miyad Yaseh Kol HaMitzvos Me'ava, which is the continuation of the Pasuk in Shema. Do you have a question?
I was just thinking, I wonder if it's different for a generation, because to me, like, Yira is internalizing the sense that Hashem runs the world and that our actions actually will mean something.
So it's a very good point. And I do think different generations have, some things are more naturally easy and difficult. But the other thing that should be mentioned is that when he speaks about Yira here, he's speaking specifically about Yiras and Yiras Ha'onesh or the like. That's not the only type of Yira. For example, in Perek Beis of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, he talks about Yiras HaRomimus, which is a very high madrega. It's not about me, it's about my recognition of the relationship between God and me, and how I'm nothing in His presence, and He's all-powerful, and like you said, the awareness of how He runs the world and the like. So when we use the term Yira, Yira can be very positive. Yiras HaRomimus. What he's talking about over here, which is more in terms of Yiras HaOnesh and the like, so that is a lower Madrega. Now the next line in the Rambam is very beautiful. The Ketzad Hi Ha'ava HaRuya. What is the type of Ahava that's Ruya? But I see we're out of time, so I'm going to leave you with a cliffhanger. It's an amazing next paragraph, which is really very appropriate as we approach Shavuos, because he describes the nature of Ahavas Hashem in very poetic and powerful words. Anyone that thinks that Rambam was this dry rationalist and hasn't read this halacha, but we'll get there next week, Rezat Hashem.